done sensibly is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
A good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 1210 on this Wednesday afternoon, and pretty foggy here, low clouds in the downtown area. We hope to brighten up your day just a little bit, but maybe not by looking at the markets. Here to help us through everything is Miss Terry Savage. Terry, how you doing here today?
I'm doing fine, and I must tell you, I wish I were in the studio with you, but I have been in a recording studio yesterday, today, and will be for the rest of the week.
Because you got a new album coming out?
Yeah, indeed. Pretty soon, in the next 2 weeks, we'll make a big deal out of it. A brand new edition of The Savage Truth on Money will be released, and with it, the audio version. So I have been talking my book into a microphone for hours on end.
That must take a long time.
I'm glad to talk to you.
Do you ever read it and you're like, oh man, I wish I would have edited this, or is everything just as gold as you remember?
I love reading it. I'm such a roll reading it. I feel like I'm talking to an audience. We'll have to get some public speeches set up.
Yes.
But meanwhile, look at the headline. The Dow down 550 points, in case you weren't looking, after yesterday's loss. This is interesting.
Well, the president tweeted about an hour ago all this impeachment nonsense, which is going nowhere, is driving the stock market and your 401ks down. This is exactly what the Democrats want to do. And he goes on to say some other things, too. But agree or disagree. I mean, I imagine political turmoil in general isn't good for a market that already has some warning signs sort of baked in.
Boy, you can be our new financial analyst. That's exactly true. And I think what's bringing it to a head today is a very sudden realization. The news about Bernie Sanders' health really makes it I'm not a political analyst. I'm just talking about facts here. It makes it much more likely that Elizabeth Warren will be the Democratic candidate, you know, barring some other unusual events. And so now the street is divided on who is going to hurt the economy more, the president with the tariffs, not to mention all other things, but speaking just financially, with the tariffs that have already now we've seen impacted our manufacturing, are beginning to impact consumer confidence, et cetera, or Elizabeth Warren with her outright promise to break up the tech companies and tax wealth. If you were on Wall Street, this makes it a very tough choice. And that's why I think you're seeing a kind of a surge to get out of the markets, store up some cash, have a cushion of safety. I mean, I can give you a lot of technical reasons why this bull market longer than any other
right
all over. But today and yesterday, I think what you're seeing is definitely, as you pointed out, related to the political, not uncertainty, but the greater certainty that the two potential candidates both have flaws in regard to our financial future.
I guess what I'm driving at is that, you know, a political uncertainty in and of itself may not be enough to move the markets, but the ground wasn't exactly solid to be walking on anyways.
Well, that's true. But the point is not so much about political uncertainty now. I think we just tipped over a point into political certainty. Mm-hmm. About the two candidates. So the whole impeachment thing and the whole you know, the tariff thing and the fact that if the president, whatever you might think, that if the president is impeached, he loses his power in international negotiations. So who knows what will happen with the tariffs on the one hand versus a candidate who walks around saying, I'm going to break up the tech companies and anybody who's wealthy, I'm going to confiscate your money. That's a better word for tax it away. That's the same thing. Those things strike fear and terror into the heart of the investing class. And frankly, it's not just the wealthy people that should be concerned, the ones who will be hit by the taxes. But see what happens when either of these things happens? It's not good for ordinary working people who have IRAs or 401ks and where management of big corporations whose stocks they invest in just go, I don't know if we're going to grow. I don't know if we're going to hire more people. I don't know if we're going to build that new plant. We got to worry about tariffs. We got to worry about taxes. So none of this is good for the economy or the market.
Yeah, I'm trying to ignore all the Joe Biden people that seem to think that you're forgetting about Joe Biden. But we'll move away from politics just for a second. But it is still kind of related. The idea being, you know, we were looking at, we've made these gains, Enrique and I, and you're trying to find a spot maybe you want to pull out a little bit. Is it it? Do you think people are looking for that opportunity? They have that itch. They want to do it, and then any little thing can be the thing that grabs them out.
No, that's the problem, John.
Well, I'm not saying that it's the, I'm not saying it's the answer. I'm just saying that.
No. The problem is very few people are looking for that spot to withdraw. Most people are looking for us to just, as we have done for the last 10 years, we'll get over this, the market will rebound. And you know, it feels silly for me because I've said so many times, we're still within, you know, shooting distance of the all-time highs, but within 1,000 points for sure. So maybe right now, if you look back a year from now, you might want to look back in hindsight and say, you know what, I'm just glad I took the last year's profits. We're up 20%.
Mm-hmm.
On the S&P 500 this year. If you were only in an index fund, do you maybe want to take 20%, take this year's profits and set them aside in a money market fund or CDs? This is the moment that you look back on and say, I didn't know it would. I always thought it was just going to keep going.
Right.
People are not looking to get out. They're lulled into the stay in. And the point is, it's time to take some money off the table, unless you are really, really a risk taker.
Right. Terry Savage, let's talk about FAFSA. It's that wonderful time of the year again.
Absolutely it is, John, as we watch the Dow now down 525 points about. I hate the word FAFSA. It stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. It doesn't do everything. It actually only gives freshmen $5,500 if they qualify based on need. But FAFSA, the application, is the basis on which many colleges and universities grant additional aid. So everybody, unless you're very wealthy, should apply using the FAFSA form. And you can find out more at fafsa.ed.gov. They have an actual app for that. It's called the My Student Aid app. I'm not going to get into all the details of this. I just want to say that if you are a parent or even a grandparent of a high school student, this is the moment right now. First of all, it's first come, first served on many schools' financial aid, so you want to get that application in early and list your 10 schools that you want this information sent to you. Now, I spent 99% of my time warning people about student financial aid and the $1.5 trillion worth of debt that's been accumulated. So I feel a little sheepish about encouraging people to apply for it. That's point one. Point two is, if your child goes to an expensive school, maybe they'll get additional merit aid from the school for high SAT scores or whatever, but the gap between the $5,500 freshman year financial aid from the government and the tuition plus living expenses is likely to be large. You may not have saved enough. Most parents haven't saved enough to fill that gap. Before you file the FAFSA, or as you're filing it and choosing the schools you want the info sent to, could you please have a discussion with your kids about the total cost of college?
Like, sit down and add it all up.
Yeah. Cost, and it'll even increase. And maybe you want to take the suggestion I made 10 years ago or more and people laughed at. Bribe your kids. Tell them that if they will stay and live at home for the first 2 years, much lower cost, of course, that you will pay for all of the last 2 years if they qualify to get into a good school. That's the way to handle this. What? There's nothing worse, I'll just leave it at this, than your kid gets into that really terrific school and you look at each other and say, but we can't afford it. We can't take on that much debt. Think about it as you're filing for federal financial aid. What's the overall cost? What's the gap between what you save and what this school could cost? And then at that point, decide which schools you want to send this information to.
I never understood. Look, I love that we invest in our children. And I think that's so important, and that 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds want to guide their future. But I never understood the idea of a student says, oh, this is my dream school, which might be just influenced by culture, might be influenced by their friends, and that the parents make that decision when you're talking sometimes out-of-state school, two times, three times as much money. I know when I got to choose between the University of Illinois and Missouri, my parents kind of left it up to me. I didn't even look at the financials. I had some buddies that went to U of I, and I think my parents probably sighed the biggest sigh of relief when I made that decision.
Absolutely. My parents told me that they couldn't afford to pay because I had two younger brothers, and they took me to Ann Arbor, and I went, oh my God, this is college, and that was it. I applied early admission that year. Look, if you want to know how to have this discussion about the cost of college, go to my column at terrysavage.com today on FAFSA, because included is a link to what the expected costs are at various colleges. The other thing is, I'm going to write another column about college guidance counselors who can tell you that there may be some schools that you haven't thought of that really want a diverse population of students, both geographic and every other way, where you might qualify for more aid, even if it's not based on financial need. But take this seriously, folks, and start the process today if you have a senior, and if you have a junior in high school, get going on this, understanding this, so you can make the proper adjustments to your own finances before you apply next year.
My parents also made a deal with me that if I was an RA for 2 or 3 years, they'd help me buy a car when I got out of college, and that was a great incentive.
Exactly. We've forgotten about that. Students think it's a right, and parents find out that they've mortgaged their future for kids who, A, don't get the great jobs, and, B, are going to be busy raising their own kids when the parents are old and need some help because they raided their retirement accounts to put the kids through college.
312-981-7200. We might have time for a one call with Terry Savage, or a text if you've got any questions. I don't want to dive too deep into the FAFSA thing, as we talked about, Terry, but I do have, how much documentation is needed to go into that? Because you're essentially proving your entire family's wealth. But it could be an opportunity to kind of be an impetus to get your own house in order in some ways.
Well, they're going to turn your house inside out when you file the FAFSA form. Remember, the tax form, the IRS form, only asks about your income, various forms of income, all your income, of course. But the FAFSA form inquires about parental assets as well. And there's a whole long list. You can learn more about it at FAFSA.ed.gov. But there's a whole long list of things that are counted and not counted. One of the worst things you could ever do is open a custodial account for your child, because money in a child's name in a custodial account weighs far more heavily against you in the financial aid formula. So there are a lot of tricks to this, and if you've got a freshman or sophomore, two websites, FAFSA.ed.gov and FinAid, FINAID.org. These are the places where you start learning how to restructure your life in order to, I'm not saying give your kids up for adoption, but just the way you do with your taxes, structure your life in order to qualify to pay less taxes, in this case to receive perhaps more financial aid. But again, financial aid, that's great, but it's never, never enough on its own.
Yeah.
Savings helps, and parental debt is the most expensive debt. Avoid those PLUS loans like the plague. That's the most expensive way to borrow.
773 chimed in, and they wondered that their student is just about done with college, luckily went to an affordable school, not going to make a lot out of their first couple years of school. What's the best way to convince them to start saving right away? Because no matter how many times they say it, this child doesn't think that they're going to want to contribute to their 401k right away. Is there any, I don't know,
yeah,
if it's just knocking them over the head
answers.
Or something. Go ahead.
No, two quick answers. If they get a job with a company that has a 401k, most companies will default them into it, point out that they're having money taken out for Social Security, FICA, which they'll never likely see if they're starting out after college. Sorry, folks, but that's true. And then let them automatically be defaulted into the 401k. But if not, if they don't get a job that has a 401k, you as a parent, if you've got any money left after college, might decide to open a Roth IRA for them. There's no deduction for that. You could contribute up to the amount they earned, up to the limits each year. So you could put, even if you just put a couple of $1,000 in a Roth IRA in the student's name or the graduate's name, and if that person has earned income, it doesn't matter where the money came from, because time leverages money. And the most important thing, young people think, no, money's so important. But we all know that the most important thing was the time that leveraged the money. So if you can make it happen for your 20-something, there's an easy shot just tracking the performance of the stock market to have a multi-million dollar IRA by the time they're ready to retire.
Got a question for the 847. You grabbed my attention when you said consider taking money off the table now, perhaps. If you are 50-50 invested in, say, Vanguard bonds and stocks, would you say that you're okay? We got about a minute to answer that, Terry.
The answer is no, because unlike most people think, stocks and bonds most recently have moved in tandem. You can lose as much money in a bond portfolio, especially if interest rates rise. So I would say that I don't know your personal situation. That's all in your retirement account. But if you've got some savings outside of it, a cushion, so you don't have to be required to withdraw and sell stocks at the wrong time, maybe. If you're going to be close to required withdrawals, raise some cash inside your retirement account. Otherwise, have a cash cushion outside. This is the perfect moment to get some fiduciary financial help, a fee-only financial advisor, a fiduciary that has your best interests in mind. Go to WealthRamp.com to find one of those. It's like Match.com for fiduciaries.
All right, you did it so quick, I got time for one more 30-second answer. This is a good one. What about grandparents that have offered to pay for college? How does that fit in with parents filling out the FAFSA form?
Oh, well, their offer is not on the table, so it's based on your financial needs. The grandparents may have set up a 529 account. Do that, grandparents. There are different rules for how the money counts when it's withdrawn, so most families should save that for the last year or two of college. Thank the grandparents. File for financial aid and try and take as little aid as possible, because that's what costs so much over the long run. Not only the aid, but the interest. It's over 4.5%. In your money market account, you're earning maybe 1%. Student loan interest is 4.5%. I'll leave you with this thought. I've put it in writing and sent it to Washington. Why should the government get to borrow for 10 years at 1.5% when financial aid costs you 4.5%? That's insane.
Write your congressman.
Don't borrow and help it. Yep.
All right, Terry Savage from TerrySavage.com. Thank you so much for stopping on by here on the phone.
Thanks, John. Always fun to be with you.
12:37 on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand is out. John Hansen is here. And the man with the best voice in all not of radio. Tommy, do you ever consider going into the business? You got this incredible presence.
You are a friend. Yeah. I appreciate it.
CEO of LaSalle Network. How's everything going?
Knock on wood. Things are good.
Yeah, always knock on wood. You got to do that. Let's talk about people that become managers and the different responsibilities that has. I was in a position much younger, right when I came out of college. I was working at a little radio station and they wanted to promote me to manager. And I thought, of course, duh, that's what you want to do. And I got in that position and it just was a lot more difficult to navigate than I think I had realized. I imagine a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, and it's difficult to navigate if you have emotional intelligence.
Okay.
Right? So there's two. It's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Right.
You start off, and number one is you actually care about the people that you're managing and how your message is being received. And the second one is you're just going to do what you think is best, and you don't care.
Right.
Right? And then there's branches that come off of either one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And where managers really have a hard time is as they evolve, they realize they should probably be a happy medium of both.
Right, and that makes sense. Like, you want to be connected with your coworkers, but at the end of the day, it's a results-driven thing, and you've got to kind of keep your eye on the prize. I like this first point that you mentioned in this article you sent about stop with the perfectionism, and I can almost see it in new bosses sometimes. I'm sure we've all had that new boss that comes in firing out of the gate.
Yep.
And is on you every second, which I get. Maybe they're new, they're at it, but, you know, perfectionism never happens, ever.
Correct.
So expecting it is probably a big pitfall.
Yeah, and so when you have the best performers, right? Michael Jordan was never a coach and he hasn't been a great owner. Right.
Right.
The best aren't always good at being teachers
right.
to others. Now, at the same time, I don't think it excludes them.
Right.
But it's not a prerequisite to be a great manager. So if you have people who were great and they expect you to be like them, that's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people, if they weren't great, they want to be the person that makes everybody Michael Jordan. Guess what? That's not going to happen either.
Right.
So what T's have to be crossed and I's dotted? What must happen in order for the job to get done?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look little by little where people need to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And the expression baby steps is baby steps for a reason. It's not adult steps. It's
right.
not jumping.
Yes.
It's baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that and you grow and you get better. And the mantra that I've always used is, John, be better tomorrow than you were today.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I love about, one thing I love about work, I work at a TV show on CW26. We get a new show every day. And I imagine everyone's like that. You got to, no matter, it's like baseball. You struck out four times, guess what? There's another game tomorrow.
And the difference is when you get into corporate America, for the most part, we talk about here, is you're building on what you did yesterday, the project maybe. You screwed up for the client yesterday. I got to come in. I've got to continue to do work for you today.
Mm-hmm.
And how you handle that and the rejection, the overcoming. The difference between sports is I'm facing a different pitcher tomorrow.
Right. That's true. And you're facing the same sort of struggles as
That's
you go
about. That's the challenge.
Yeah, that is certainly one of them. I imagine, you know, all the normal tropes we talk about, effective communication, yada, yada, yada. Getting better every day. That's all great stuff. But I love working for a manager that says, here's where I want to be in 1 year.
Yep.
And here's how we get there. Here's what 6 months from now looks like. Here's what 3 months from now. So I imagine it's about setting that plan, communicating it, but then also being okay to veer off and figure it out along the way.
The biggest challenge between corporate America and the difference between that and sports is in corporate America, the manager can play.
Yeah.
In sports, the manager can't suit up and go out on the court or the field.
Not anymore. They used to do that back in baseball.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Connie Mack, no more. Yes.
But you can't, in business and in life, the manager can. And the manager can't be afraid of turnover and doing what is right.
Mm-hmm.
And where it usually lacks is they don't want to have accountability and confrontation because they don't want to look somebody in the eye and say, John, guess what? You're not doing this right because they're afraid John's going to quit.
Mm-hmm.
Or worse, John's going to stay with a subpar attitude.
Right.
And those are the things that you've got to be willing to handle the turnover in order to get the right team doing the right actions.
How do you, especially if you're taking over as a manager, either they've created that position out of thin air or more than likely they're taking over for someone else.
Yep.
Either they were let go, promoted, whatever the case may be. You might have very talented workers there that didn't particularly like the last boss or maybe were underperforming. How hard is it to identify someone that has more that they can tap into versus someone that might be brown-nosing you and you should recognize that off the bat? I mean, that's got to be a real hard judging the
talent.
Especially if you're coming into a new and you don't necessarily know the landscape of where you've worked.
And it's a really important thing. So if you enter a company from the outside, you've got to build a relationship with your boss and say, what's my timeline? And understand what you're being held accountable to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know if you have to make decisions right out of the gate. And then most importantly, though, it's the level of trust you build with your new employees. So are you going to invest the time? And if you're a manager, sometimes people think, oh, I'm in management. That's going to be an easier job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go do the hard work. I'm just managing the people. In the beginning, especially first 6 months, first year, it's a FaceTime job because you've got to build relationships with your staff. Even if they're remote, you've got to do FaceTimes. You've got to do Skypes. You've got to do Zooms. You've got to talk to them. You've got to spend time getting to know what's going on in their life and how work fits into that equation and be able to help guide them to what they want. Some people want to move into management.
Right.
Some want to make more money. Some want to get a transfer out of that division.
Right.
You've got to want to know what motivates them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Skype and all those interesting, I shouldn't say new tools, but fairly recent tools in the last decade or so. I imagine a lot of managers, people listening right now, maybe considering being promoted. They want to get into that line of work in their 40s and 50s, are going to be working, or 30s, working with people right out of college. The workforce, we've talked about this before, has changed.
Yep.
One of these points about not appreciating people enough. People got to at least recognize that in this workforce where people have a lot of choices on where they can work, they've got to do a little adjusting to not only millennials, I mean to Gen Z that's coming into the workforce.
You realize that as a manager, if you're going to be an emotional leader, you've got to have those conversations with people, and it takes time. So you might be spending on a half-hour call, 10 or 15 minutes, about nothing that relates to the job getting done.
Mm-hmm.
And people always go, well, why would I do that? And the answer is because when you lay the foundation and you build that relationship, the job will get done better and faster. You're just putting the time in the beginning to get it right versus hours to fix it after it's A, broken, B, the person leaves.
Right.
Right? Spend the time up front. And you'll because whenever somebody leaves, people always wish, oh, how could I have managed them differently? I'm telling you now, do it in the beginning and build the relationship.
Yeah, I just imagine that old feeling of a boss who just is, you know, always pounding the fist to the pavement, you know, getting people going, is on one end of the spectrum, and being their best friend, as you mentioned, is on the other. And it's navigating to that middle. And it sounds easy, but I imagine the day-to-day, and every business is different, is much harder than it seems.
It's like being in a marriage. Right?
Yes, for sure.
To quote my father, you can't live with him and you can't live without him.
Yes, right.
And it's the same thing with staff. You've got to put in the time to build a relationship. And for all the listeners, it goes both ways. Wives and husbands and wives can't live with them, can't live without them.
Right. Well, I'm still in the first year of mine, so everything's all gloryful and wonderful.
I hope it stays that way.
All right, Tom. Thanks so much, CEO of LaSalle Network. Have a wonderful rest of the week, okay?
Thank you. You as well.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Is your kid wondering what they want to do when they get to college? Are they thinking maybe they could be a doctor or an engineer, or, ooh, maybe they want to pursue business? Well, whatever they plan on doing and wherever they plan on going, University of Illinois just got another selling point. They announced that they would soon be opening their Discovery Partner Institute, where students would be able to develop smart technologies. The thing that makes this particularly special is that it's a subsidiary of Foxconn, one of the manufacturers that makes iPhones. But this isn't their first time setting up a worker pipeline in the industry. They also funded $100 million engineering research at University of Wisconsin. But this learning doesn't come easy, and we all know school comes with lots of books. But if you find some of these books at a Chicago library, don't worry about paying late fees anymore. Mayor Lightfoot announced the cancellation of late fees to increase access to libraries citywide. So maybe the next time you're getting a book online from Amazon or downloading an ebook for $6 to $12 that seems like a good idea at the time, there could be a building right down the block that will literally give it to you for free. Literally. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. Joining us now on the phone, Frank Sennett, Director of Digital Strategy at Crane Chicago Business. Frank, good to chat with you here.
Yes, good to be here. Thank you.
Wasn't it so tragic what happened to those Brewers last night?
I know, I'm still crying about it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay, let's jump in here. I think a lot of young adults want their undergraduate years to go on as long as they can. But for folks that are getting an MBA, a business degree, whatever it might be, a postgraduate, sometimes they want those to go a little quicker. Well, good news, Loyola and U of C are shortening some of their programs, right?
Yes, that's right. There is a big movement afoot to get people out the door and into the high-paying new jobs that they're going to get after MBA time at the University of Chicago and at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola.
How short are we talking here?
Yeah, so Loyola is doing a radical redesign, is what they call it, including letting students complete the program in 1 year as opposed to 18 months to 2 years. So, and also a bifurcated approach of learning some on campus and some online. So they're making it, you know, easier than ever to kind of pack that stuff in and get back out the door. And then the U of C at Booth School of Business is allowing people to get a joint law and business degree, so they can be a double threat, and they can complete that program in 3 years as opposed to the typical four. So they're going to shave a year off of that.
So if I'm someone that's thinking about this from a business perspective for Loyola and U of C, some would say, well, you're losing out on tuition dollars, but are you offsetting that by attracting people to quicker programs?
Yeah, I think, you know, like any kind of industry out there, you know, the education industry is being disrupted by market forces, by the internet, all that kind of stuff. And so I think that this is just kind of a savvy way to say, this is kind of the way things are moving with the rise of online programs, et cetera. We need to, stay attractive, stay out in front of the trends. So I think that, this is them just trying to make sure they're staying relevant.
I assume that the professors are just going to talk twice as fast.
Yeah, put it on 1.5 speed, like the way some people listen to podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. All right, shifting gears, Crate and Barrel. Obviously, a lot of folks know that store all across the area. Adding 200 jobs to Romeoville.
Yeah, speaking of disruption, you know, it wasn't that long ago we had that beautiful Crate and Barrel store in on the Mag Mile,
oh, yeah.
Right on Michigan Avenue, and now that's like a big Starbucks. Meanwhile, Crate and Barrel's online business is growing, even as its brick and mortar footprint has gotten smaller. And so they are opening a 650,000 square foot fulfillment center, in Romeoville. It's going to employ up to 200 people there to basically serve the online order fulfillment for Crate and Barrel.
Is it going to be, what sorts of jobs are we talking? Are they, delivery, moving things around? Are there some tech aspects to it, too, or do we not know yet?
Yeah, I think we don't know yet, but I think the bulk of them would be, traditional warehouse jobs, picking the items, filling out the orders, getting them ready to ship, sending them out the door.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, 200, it doesn't seem like a lot to some people, but in one specific area, that could be a nice little boon. And also, like you're saying, it could be a symbol of, ways that other businesses are trying to kind of navigate this world of losing that brick and mortar aspect, but still retaining employment for people and also obviously keeping revenue high.
That's right. And Crate and Barrel says that now almost half of their sales are online.
Great, Crane Chicago Business, what else you guys got? Anything else cooking on the radar here today? And where can people find out more information about all the stuff that you do, Frank?
Well, you know, the one thing I would really recommend, if you haven't seen the amazing forum package that we have on water issues, there's a great video that you can find at chicagobusiness.com, and a lot of stories about, you know, the various issues facing the Chicago area in terms of water.
All right. Frank Sennett, you can follow him on Twitter at Sennett Report, two N's, two T's. Although, Frank, I got to say, your Twitter's going to become a little less interesting after a certain manager was no longer in town.
I did not shed many tears about that either.
I always think of you first when it happens. And can I just say, I think you were right all along. All right, Frank, thanks for chatting with us here today.
Thank you.